Okay, since not very many professional cosmologists here, so I probably will give some very simplified comments on the general subject. So first, of course, everyone knows that we live in a place called the universe. And the most important thing for knowing about the universe is its age. So it's roughly 13 billion years. Age is important because it actually, from age we can figure out how much of the universe we can see and observe. It's simply speed of light times the age of the universe, and that's it. And it becomes, obviously, 13 billion light years. The universe is made of mostly, as we believe now, of thing which is called dark energy. It's something like 75% of gravitating stuff in the universe is dark energy, and actually it's gravitational repulsion, but it's not interesting for this workshop because the dark energy is perfectly uniform. Nothing to discuss except that it's number. Physicists do not know what it is. It's a big physical question, but not a big geometrical question. 22 or so percent, we also don't know what it is, but it's called now dark matter, and it has normal gravitational attraction force. And it's driving force in the building of the structure, which I will talk about. And the rest, something like a few percent, it's baryons, it's stuff stars made of, and us as well. Okay, so first, it's kind of two-slide history of the subject. Oh, it's much better to go to the structures I'll talk about, not from saying that the, you know, imagine that the Earth has the size of the grain multiplied 10 to 5 times, and you find galaxy and so forth, many steps. It's much better to go down. So the universe, which is observable part of the universe, is 13 billion light years, and I will talk about the star which is the largest by size objects, if we can call them objects, which may be on the level of a percent of that distance, maybe a fraction of a percent. So it's something like, 10, I remember many numbers in megaparsecs, you probably know astronomers use it, weird unit. One parsec is the distance from a star to us, such that the orbit of the Earth has angle size of 1 second, parallax of one second, or a star moves 1 second. It's 3 light years, so I tried to keep light years. I think light years are more physical points. Okay, so what we knew about the structure in the universe, say 25 or 30 years ago, that just a figure shows what theorists thought about the universe, the result of so-called n-body simulations. N-body simulations then and now, a very simple thing, principally. So you generate the positions of n particles and their velocities and allow them to move in common field of gravity. That's it. As simple as that. Those particles has nothing in common with any object in the universe. Because if dark matter particles as elementary particles, and these things at present have size of small galaxy. So this is technical parameter. The problem is that initially people tried to move particles, simply summing up their contribution from all the rest particles, but it's very easy to figure out that the n square problem numerically. So time grows proportional to square of the number of particles, and it beats you very quickly. So those people developed various, and the most of the progress currently is simply to solve that numerical problem. I won't talk about that. So here is that time state of art and body simulation, and that's the universe at present, according to the simulation. So this bunch of particles that which gather together in some places, and that's process, physical process is called gravitational stability. It's very simple. It actually shows that capitalism operates on a scale of 100 million light years. It essentially can be said that the place where you have incidental enhancement of mass attracts more mass. The place where it was deficient of mass lose mass. So rich gets richer and poor gets poor. That's very simple. Okay, and you can see here that it's not much structure here. And theorists thought that time. And observations, also some observations suggested that there's a more interesting, more complicated structure were present. Okay, so that was observation published in 1978. The galaxies or position or distances of galaxies, that's a big problem in astronomy to measure distances to objects, were estimated for, say, something like 100 or 200 galaxies. Each dot here is a galaxy. This is kind of slice through the universe. We are here and observe that direction. And these lines, of course, were not observed. They were plotted by hand by these two astronomers. And they said, what they were surprised, but this thing they knew about that. It was so-called rich cluster of galaxies. It has this kind of cucumber type of shape because it's not real shape, it's simply artifact of our way of measuring or estimating distances. It's distances estimated using Doppler effect, and therefore if you have compact clump of particles zooming back and forth in a common gravitational field, the particles which move away of you actually becomes on this diagram there, which is moved to you, actually shifted to you because this relative velocity reduces compared to the expansion of the unit. So what's the surprise? There was a bridge here. So there are other clusters of galaxies, and in the previous slides we saw no such features. Okay, that time I was in Moscow, and so I worked in the Dovich group, and he suggested one very simple theory for to describe the evolution of the structure, and after some kind of sort of simulation, it's not exactly a body simulation, we found this the rust at models which make qualitatively at least in agreement there is a such cluster. Another one is a bridge between them. But the drawback was, of course, first it was theory and people didn't believe in that theory for another 10 years, in the West especially. And second, it was two-dimensional simulation, picture two-dimensional. Of course, we live in three-dimensional. Now, so we tried to do three-dimensional body simulation, again, back in Moscow, and it was state of art. I wrote that time at the Institute a similar name as this one. It's called Institute of Applied Mathematics. Probably you heard about that. Now it's called Keltish Institute of Applied Mathematics. So we had one of the best computers available for non-classified research there. And that computer had 32K cells of memory numbers. And this simulation on 32 cube particles. You can imagine how you operate with that computer, having only x coordinates, and you have to do, of course, forces and fast Fourier transform and so in space. So you, of course, you put your stuff on external novelty disks that time, tape recorded. One night, I was almost, arrested because when I came to pick up my, code, it was a bunch of cards, and the engineer called me and said, showed me, this print white piece of paper, that read this. So what, it's something like CPU time, something 15 seconds, tape time 6 hours. So as from that, he said, if you do it again, you never get access to the computer. So I start thinking hard how to make more, you know, clever to writing and reading that stuff. Anyway, but we got what we wanted, actually. So in some models, you have this cluster of galaxies. Another one is marked dot by dot, and there is a bridge there. OK, now, after 30 years or so, progress in observational cosmology, we see this number of particles. It's one of the redshift surveys. Again, this is called wedge diagram, thin slice through the universe. This is the distance, or actually what is measured, the redshift, the velocity. And each dot is a galaxy. And you see this kind of structures which are kind of interwoven into one single web. That's the origin of the name. And here you see the total number, only something like 62,000 galaxies here out of 220 in the whole survey. And this is another American survey, Sloan Digital Sky Survey. Total number of galaxies, 1 million with redshifts. And so there is, again, this rich structure. It's a little bit of projection effect here, but you see it's kind of a complex structure, relatively complex. And now, okay. So the distance in terms of megaparsecs is something like 800 here. So times 3 is something 2,000 million light years. Okay, that's pretty big chunk of space. But you know, it's also illustrates some problems dealing with this type of data. You see this strip here empty. It's not because that the universe is empty there. It's simply something was on the sky, maybe bright object there or whatever, or maybe they simply, by whatever reason, they couldn't observe that. So you deal with this distribution and it has lots of things. Now, this is evolution, actually. This is region which I showed before in 78. Then this picture became a very big success in the United States. These authors, sort of forgetting about that, claim that they discovered this structure, and it exists now in every textbook on astronomy. And this is bigger size, and it's called where is it? It's Great Wall. Astronomers look for something big, and they usually say, okay, this thing is a group of galaxies. By the way, you shouldn't think that the galaxies are touching each other. The size of dots is much, much greater than actual size of galaxies on this scale. If the dots were size of galaxies, then we would see just simply white space. So they don't touch it. They don't to a point object for this matter. So this thing is kind of like called Great Wall. Now, of course, bigger survey. It's beyond this in the same direction. And now this is called Great Wall. And so people go even greater. I don't know why it's wall. Now, this is a result of n-body simulations. And so you see these very complicated structures, very big volume. This is 120 megaparsecs or 300 million light years. And you see that the structure is quite, you know, it's remind now really well. So, and the purpose of the talk is try somehow to quantify it. What should be measured? Apparently, there are several scales here in my eye. So there is thickness of these filaments, their filaments, and also the length of these filaments. There's an order of magnitude difference. Okay, now that I'm done with that. Now, very quickly about the process of gravitational stability. This is different map. It's called Wilkinson Microanisotropic Probe map. And I think that Jean-Luc will talk a little bit more nice pictures about that. It's simply to show here that we know now well from observations the initial conditions. They are not completely calculable from theory, but they can be measured. So this is actually the tells us that the initial perturbations were very close to Gaussian field. People and Jean-Luc will talk us how good it's Gaussian. And we see the surface of light scattering. So we see some places with hotter temperature, some with colder temperature. If you can call it, the difference is a few micro degrees of Kelvin. Knowing the initial conditions, we can pretty well, at least conceptually, describe the evolution. So the density field can be represented as that's Fourier space, and it is one dimensional, but actually it's three dimensional. And so the amplitude grows with time, and at some point, and this is a spectrum here, power spectrum. So let's consider sort of for talking about flat spectrum. If it was linear evolution, it would grow to here. If it's nonlinear, it actually becomes like this. But this part grows exactly like linear theory. So large scales, and let's claim that the large scales are in linear regime. All interesting thing happens on scales smaller than this scale of nonlinearity. And it's currently roughly in the range of 5 megaparsecs, or 15 million light years. Okay, so, and this, what evolution here is described as hierarchical clustering, which actually means that smallest clumps form, then they move, merge into bigger clumps, which merge further, and so forth. But what happens here? There are actually, theoretically, two options. First option, that it's here, everything is as it was in linear regime. So anyway, amplitude grows linearly. So, but actually, it's not correct, I'll show you. Because this is 5 megaparsecs, and if I showed you, if you remember the previous, oops, that's I'm going in the wrong direction. Okay. Here you see the structures much greater than 5 megaparsecs, so it's rather the range of close to 100 megaparsecs. Okay. Okay, now, so the linear evolution assumes that the amplitudes, Fourier components, grow independently on each other, and they're proportional to some known function of time. But also, the linear evolution is must assume, which always cosmologists quite often forget, the conservation of values of phases. Phases shouldn't evolve. We'll come to that later. Okay, now, there is another option which I mentioned before. You can, instead of thinking about evolution in Fourier space, think it's about real space. So the particles initially having position u move to position r at time t. And actually, you can write very simple equation like this. This is expansion of the universe, uniform, known function. This is a known function of growth, and this is initial conditions. You can think about this, the initial velocities. They're not one. What people commonly do, they exclude uniform expansion, introducing so-called commoving coordinates. And then it will look even simpler. This simple mapping from initial position u to final position x actually results in this equation for the density. It's very simple calculation, but this density shows that there are factors in the denominators which may be zeros. This predicts formation of cosmics. So some places, trajectories of particles merge and they form infinite density. And so it actually predicts much richer structure. So it's actually worked quite well, even when small scales present. So this is result of n-body simulation, or some n-body simulation. This is a result if you simply take linear theory and just simply propagate it into time, and you get something very different. If you clean up from small scale perturbation still do not get this, get this one. But if you use the Deutsch approximation with some correction, then you get at least big structures quite well. So it's a guideline in this model and also in search of structures. So actually this model, simple theoretical model, predicts the formation of three typical structures. Clumps, which astronomers accepted readily. Filaments, they didn't accept for quite a long time at all. And pancakes, so kind of two-dimensional concentration of mass. Okay, and the goal of morphological statistics is to find these structures and also discuss all this the connectedness of them. Okay, now, okay, so I will talk, this is a bunch of n-body simulations, three different models. And they have same initial conditions, but since models are different, they evolve a little bit differently. So this is model which we believe in now, this model which we used to believe, say, 10 years ago, and this has been other models which are not considered to be reliable. Now, we want to measure that morphology. And what people usually do? What kind of statistics? Of course, the first thing is, the simplest thing is just to compute 1 point or 2 point function. A 2 point function is correlation function. Tells you if you have, if you sit on a galaxy or on a clump, then what's the probability of having a clump at certain distance? Standard statistics. But it's also known that it's totally blind morphology. You can mix faces as you like, and you have exactly the same 2 point function, for instance. And okay, there are higher point statistics, which very difficult to deal with. Formally, they're sensitive to these structures, but in practice, they never were able to detect that by various reasons. Well, there is a bunch of suggestions what other statistics to use. I will concentrate on percolation, genus, and Minkowski functionals. So it's okay. As I said, it's much easier, at least to test statistics, if to work on the results of n-body simulations. You know everything. You know no spurious effects, no missed parts of the survey, and also you know true positions of the particles. And so the first thing is to define what is object. And it's kind of natural and to consider excursion sets at with help of isodensity surfaces. So what is above certain level of density, then you call it object. What is below, you call it in cosmology void. And since this object is on the scale of supercluster of galaxies, or we call them superclusters, even in body simulations. And there are some minor technical points there, which I'm not interested in. Now, okay, this is point, pictorial representation, what we have actually in n-body simulations. This is, let's say, very complex. So if you pick up this some density threshold, you will get something like this, or even like this. It is actually close to percolation. If you pick up only one largest cluster, which actually spans throughout the whole box, simulation box. And the question is, what you have to measure here in order to quantify it? These are voids. It's voids under dense regions. And they're also quite complex. If you define them as volumes below certain density threshold. People tried to approximate it with ellipsoids. So this is pictorially. This is this void. If you construct ellipsoid with the same inertia tensor as this one, so you get this. Well, it's kind of size more or less okay, but they're not quite. Okay, now this is example. Of course, in order to solve the problem of measuring these complex structures, you might simplify the structure, in particular for voids. So this is real distribution of particles here, gray points. red points is sort of fake galaxies. And you see here this is a region, no galaxy, so it's a void. So different people suggested their techniques to identify voids here. Some finished projects, so I do not give references. So this is, I like this best. It's everything is in void, very simplified. And typically, this is quite typical. So people want to approximate it with spheres, or at least either one sphere or several spheres, some of them actually merge, some of them simply projections. So if you do contours of constant density, you have something like this. So you see that it's, but it's maybe, it may look better than this one, but now which numbers should I measure here in order to quantify it? These are simple, okay, this either the radius or volume, simple. That's a problem. And another problem relates to phenomena which is known percolation. Well, nothing real percolates in the universe. Percolation actually is about the connectedness. So imagine that you have three-dimensional field and pick up very high threshold. What is above that threshold? Only very few isolated regions, probably very compact, maybe almost not spherical, but kind of close to it. Then you reduce that threshold. You, of course, some of those merged with each other, some became greater, and you got new ones. So you begin, you continue this process, reducing the threshold. At some threshold, it happens that practically every region above the threshold merge into one huge region. That's percolation. And after that, and it happened quite early actually, and after it happened, either you have to artificially to choke that big, in infinite space, infinite cluster into pieces, and you have to know how to choke it, or do it artificially, and then you would study not the real distribution, but rather your algorithm of choking. Or you can apply the known techniques and, well, quantify it with some percolation statistics. This is, and the question is, why we see those so thin filaments and they interwoven into one structure? Is it because initial conditions like that, or it's nonlinear dynamics mainly? And actually, this three figure suggested to show you that it's both important. So what is here? This is on horizontal, is this, we call it filling factor, or it's actually fraction of the volume in the excursion set above the threshold. So this may run from zero, of course, to one, but it's only plotted up to 0.2. On the vertical is the volume in one largest by volume cluster, and its ratio to the this excursion set volume. So the fraction of that volume in the excursion set in the largest cluster. When the threshold is high, filling factor is small, so it's here. It grows very little and suddenly jumps. And it becomes just, it means that all volume in the excursion set is just one thing. That's percolation threshold. This is very clear. These are Gaussian fields, four different Gaussian fields, linear fields in a sense. There's a different spectra. This is spectra k to the plus 4, lots of small scale power and large k's and very little large scale power. This is k to the minus 2, lots of large scale power and very little small scale power. And you see significance, and there are error bars here. So this is at, percolation happens at 0.16, one sigma level. This is much lower. These two curves correspond to the initial spectrum which we observe in the universe. But we smooth it at different, at two different scales. And since color code sort of is kind of independent, therefore I put these arrows saying that this red spectrum corresponds to this green line, and this green spectrum corresponds to this blue line. Okay, so it happened that we live in the universe which has a lot of large-scale power, and it makes stuff more connected already at the initial stage. We could live in that universe, could live in that universe in principle, but we live in the universe which has this spectrum, and if we look at this with different resolution, we see something like this even at the initial stage. So it percolates, so we must see this connection. But nonlinear evolution adds a lot. So this green line, G stands for Gauss, Gaussian field, which corresponds now to this green line. And this is this similar percolation curves. This is for overdense regions. And this is for underdense regions. This percolates, it's roughly less than, say, 5% roughly. And this is 25% of the volume. And it's again, it's like in capitalism, very few rich people, they occupy very little number of people, small, it's very little volume there, and this is large volume. So that essentially explains that connectedness. So two factors, they said, initial spectrum plus nonlinear evolution. Okay.
Are these all inflationary models?
Yeah.
So when you say initial condition, you mean after or before inflation?
No, after, of course. Before inflation was nothing, nobody knows. And during inflation, definitely we know galaxies were present, and it happened just fraction of a second. And after that, it's long evolution, and said we are talking about the stages when 13 billion years. But the model, I mean, this is model, inflation motivated, it's called. Well, and as I said, since the stage when the we from where we observe microwave background radiation, we measure that, we see the picture. So essentially, this spectrum corresponds to that picture. So even our ideas about very early stages, inflationary and generation of perturbation at that stage, are wrong. We don't care for this matter because it's measured.
So if you perturb one of those curves on the left, would it affect the curve on the right?
This curve, green curve, corresponds to the initial state of the field, of density field,
right,
of the initial state. And it is here. It's just repeated here for reference. But now, after evolution, you do same process for the density, nonlinear density field, resulted from nonlinear dynamics. And overdense regions percolate at much smaller filling factors. They percolate, and it exactly corresponds to what you saw. I showed that picture one time again, the very thin filaments going through. Voids, which are isolated regions of underdense, low density, they don't percolate, they don't like percolate, in the sense that they percolate much worse than Gaussian field. So they expand, but they still keep bounded. Okay, so, and this is another view of that. It's simply this, just one diagram. So this is for overdense regions, and there are two lines here, red lines. This solid line, it's all the total mass, and it's mass for superclusters, because mass is more interesting for them, total mass in the all regions but the largest one. And dashed line is the largest one. So at high density threshold, you have that the largest one, much smaller than all the rest, the sum of the rest. But at some point, actually, it picks up and it's one thing. So to say that in some range of density, if you pick up this threshold here, you have essentially just two structures, one structure, one infinite percolating overdense region, and the other infinite percolating underdense region. That's it. And all the rest makes just a fraction of that. Okay. Now, okay, this is what people suggested to use the genus statistics, and genus statistics related to Euler characteristic and then the topological characteristic of the surface. So it's essentially, you again pick up the density threshold and calculate Euler characteristic of the interface. And you change the density threshold and you get for some distribution here this line, this blue and red line. So here it tells you that there are many isolated clumps, here many isolated voids, and in between its interface is has very many tunnels. If you take the second half of this diagram and put it on the left, it means that you measure separately for clumps, it's the red line, and for voids, blue line, you can compare what's the difference in two fields. And the green line is what is the best fit of Gaussian field. You see that it's non-Gaussian, and people use it often and say that yes, the distribution is non-Gaussian. But what it does it tell you? It has no features, and so it absolutely doesn't feel any, and these lines show the percolation thresholds here. And so percolation and genus, the both characterize sort of topological or connectedness of the structure, but absolutely different and characterize different things here. Okay. Now, the summary of this is that in order to study these filaments, if you want to study them separately from not that like a single network or voids, then you have to be before percolation. Otherwise, it's okay. Otherwise, it's you have to chop somehow artificially, and it's always a problem. People haven't suggested physical explanation of how to chop this structure into pieces reasonably. Okay, now I showed this complex shapes of voids and supercluster and asked the question, what to measure? Well, long ago, Minkowski suggested just four simple measures for such things. Of course, they're not complete, but they have very good mathematical foundation. And one is that the volume of the region inside of this surface of constant density. The second one is the area of that region. The third one is called integrated mean curvature. So you calculate the curvatures at every point and integrate over the whole surface. And finally, this is known characteristic, other characteristics or genus related to that, and you have this is number of surfaces bounded your volume and minus number of tunnels or vice versa, depending on how you choose the sign. And these are four characteristics in three-dimensional space. They equally, and they can be applied to any complicated regions, and I'll show how they work in this case. Okay. The first suggestion was to use so-called global Minkowski functionals. So it's given density threshold. These are additive characteristics. Therefore, if you know them for two regions, you know it for the union of these two regions. So they're equally well applicable to one particular region or to all of them. And so, and as I said, that the percolating supercluster void is very particular beast in this zoo, and therefore it must be treated separately. Okay, well, astronomers are also interested in kind of more simple things, and in particular, what the sizes, how you would derive sizes from measuring this Minkowski function. Okay, so they have dimensions of volume, area, and length, and you can construct thickness, breadth, and length. And also from these numbers, you can construct planarity, filamentarity, which is, for a sphere, it is zero. For long filament, this will be zero, this will be one. And for pancake, big pancake, it will be one here, one, and zero there. So it's kind of, okay. we want to perpetrate something like this. And just, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so just another minute. I think I have a couple of slides. Okay, so the length, this is log scale, is the size of 30. It's 1.4 log scale. Breadth and thickness is size of a few, from six to 10. So this is shows that there are filaments. I skipped a few things. I just want to show one more thing, and that's a row of phases, I promise that. Okay, so let me just tell you that the phases are terribly important. These are two pictures. This is the WMAP sky, Gaussian field, and this is globe, right? This is simply different color codes in order to make it more comparable to this. And there are, if it was simple Cartesian space, it was this Fourier transform, AK, and phase. But here, of course, spherical harmonics, but there are things which are similar to amplitude and phases. Now, let's swamp amplitude and phases. So now we generated two different pictures. Now, one of the pictures has amplitudes of WMAP and phases of the globe, and vice versa. So which is which? Choice. So if we just say amplitude, say WMAP is here or there, phases are obviously opposite. So do anyone see the similarity between pictures? I mean, on the top row and bottom row. Is it similar to this or to that? My eyes is to this. And this is to that. So what is responsible for the similarity? Amplitudes or phases?
Phase.
Right. You're not astronomers. Okay, this is true. So this map is takes phases from here and amplitudes from there. And so it actually has geometry involved. And this is vice versa, it has geometry involved. So phases are terribly important. And I missed one part of the talk saying that there was evidence that phases evolve even in that part of the spectrum where amplitude grow linearly. And therefore, phase evolve, they may generate bigger scales, and that's the second scale. And that's all, so thank you.